أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. For those who are just turning in, I always give a recommendation that if you haven't heard the previous lectures, it's best if you hear at least the introductions as well as the recap. And that's because we've gone over quite a bit of material. We've started for some 1 month now with quite a bit of information. We've covered much information in the past month. We've watched the Greeks and Romans sack Jerusalem. We've taken the time to understand the growing pressure on the Jews to embrace Hellenism. And we have cheered on those brave Jews who responded to Greek and Roman occupation with warfare and martyrdom. Last week we talked about the Romans' use of crucifixion as a deterrent. And we talked extensively about how crucifixion wasn't reserved just for one man in history. I mean, we don't even believe that Isa, was crucified. But nevertheless, crucifixion wasn't used for one man. It was used predominantly on those Jews and Roman dissidents who believed that occupation of Judea was wrong. It was unjust, and it was used as a deterrent. And we've come to understand that no one could remain passive in the first century as a Messiah or as a Jew, either way. And we talked about how that was impossible because of the amount of carnage that took place at that time. There were so many people being killed, so many people being crucified. The Romans were so brutal to these people. It's very difficult to believe that Isa or any other Jew could remain strictly passive. I wanted to answer some questions that have been raised about doing this type of material. I've heard from more than one Muslim concern as to why we've spent so much time talking about Isa versus spending time talking about Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam or talking about the Book of Allah. And I think the reason why I've spent so much time on this particular subject is because this is the main opposition to Islam in the world as a movement. Christianity has taken their message to be true and have propagated their lies about Isa and about their theology around the world, even into predominantly Islamic countries. And if the Muslims are ever going to be able to reply systematically and correctly against the Christians to stop this type of movement, as well as to bring them to their senses, it's going to be necessary for them to understand the basis by which Christianity develops and grows. And when you do that, you get rid of all of the problems that are associated with trying to speak with Christians. I mean, you don't have to know, the 2,000 years of Christian theology to be able to talk with some sense with Christians. You don't have to know all of their big movements and their reformations and how they spread to the Americas. And you don't need to have extensive information about the Crusades or them hunting for relics or their problems with their popes. You don't need any of that in order to talk with them. Neither do you need to have a vast amount of information concerning Bible contradictions in order to speak with the Christians rationally. What is necessary is just a basic understanding of what happens and the growth of Christianity. Because when you know that, all of these other problems that happen with talking with Christians about this information becomes very simple. Because what happens is, and we've said this a number of times already, is that you end up with the Book of Allah pointing clearly about what takes place in the first century with Isa, and then it makes sense. And we no longer end up with the confusion that, or the arguments that many persons who have followed the path of other persons who have been involved in Bible contradictions, you end up with not having those problems. Now, we're going to start talking about James and Paul. And the reason why we're talking about James and Paul is there are two movements that we've talked about that are in first century Judea. There is the Hellenized version of Judaism that is run rampant in the area. We actually spent a good 2 or 3 hours lecturing about that. And then there is another movement. There is the movement by James, who is in the line of other Jews at this time, who have rejected this idea that their religion is going to change. They've absolutely rejected it. They're not going to adopt the Greek and Roman way of life. They're not going to stop circumcising their children. They're not going to stop, saying the equivalent to la ilaha illallah. They're not going to do that. And they're not going to bow to Roman rule peacefully and say, yeah, it's okay that you occupy our land. It's okay that you crucify us by the thousands. It's okay that, you torture our young men and you kill our women and you kill our children. It's okay. They're not going to say that. And that group of people we've identified as the Nazarites. Now, what's interesting about the Nazarites is that they do not look like Paul's movement. And in just a moment, we'll talk about that in some detail. Now, there is a number of sources we're using to get this information. We are, of course, looking to try to reconstruct this idea historically. Well, how do we do that? It's obvious that you can't just rely on the Gospels to put this history together. And the main reason for that is the Gospels themselves are not written until after the writings of Paul. The earliest books in the New Testament are not the Gospels, they're Paul's writings. Now, the reality of Paul's writings is that they are historical. They are written during this time period, and they are addressing some issues. For those you know who are familiar with this religion, Paul is answering questions that take place at this time. He, in many of his, what has been called his epistles, he's having to answer questions concerning why he says what he says and why he believes what he believes. And that's important, because the question that I have to ask then, and any Muslim should ask, is why is he being questioned? If he is correct, why is it that there's so much disagreement with other persons who are followers of Jesus with him? Why is he writing these books? And why is it that the Gospels that are written after him begin to reflect his ideas and not the historical environment of Isa? Well, we're going to talk about it in just a minute. And I think that we're able to look at Paul's writings historically because we have already studied the historical environment. We're, like we were saying before, and I've continued to use this analogy that if you wanted to study a piece of literature, you not only read the literature, but you find something out about the history of that time. You find out what other persons have written at that time. I give the example of like Frankenstein. You want to know something about Frankenstein trying to get into the head of Mary Shelley? You might want to read, you know, during her time period, what were women going through at that time? What was the social structure like? And you can get an idea of what she's trying to say in that book. Though some of it is conjecture, nevertheless, we get a better idea. Now, the same thing with Paul. We've spoken for hours about what's happening at this period of time. So when we go back to his writings and we begin to analyze what he's saying and what he's arguing about, now we have a better position to see what he's saying and find out whether or not he's correct, that he has the correct view about Isa. We know that's not going to be the case, but nevertheless. There's another book. The big reformer of Christianity, his name was Martin Luther. And Martin Luther during the 1500s is the person who starts Protestantism, modern day the Protestant religion, which where you have the Baptists, the Pentecostals, the Apostolics, any of the parts of the religion that are not Eastern Orthodox or that are not Catholic. This is the movement that happens from Martin Luther. Now, Martin Luther is a big guy in Christian thought, and what's interesting is that he wanted to throw one book out of their New Testament. He wanted to throw out the book of James. And the reason why he wanted to put it throughout the book of James is that he believed that the book of James contradicted Paul, and therefore Paul can't be contradicted, and therefore James should be removed from circulation. And there's a reason. We're going to talk about that. But the book of James is a book we're going to look at as historical writing also, and putting in its historical context. Now, the third thing we're going to be looking at is the Qumran documents. All of the writings that have been found, what's been considered today the Dead Sea Scrolls, as well as other scrolls that have been found inside of Egypt, all of these scrolls with these writings I've mentioned already gives us a view of how to understand this period of time. Now, I want to start talking first of all about Paul, who evidently changes his name to Paul from Saul. His Roman name would have been Saulinus. And what's interesting is this guy even has a name change. Why would he do that? Why would he begin to change his name from Saul to Paul? There's a big reason why. I think that most of this information we're going to talk about today could get me into a lot of trouble. Most Christians would not like to hear what I have to say. I've already had some pretty nasty emails about saying what I have to say about Paul. Paul's important because that he is the foundation of all Christianity. I have said more than once to one of my brothers who's Christian that his faith isn't in Isa, it's not in Jesus, it's in Paul, because Paul says that he has an experience. He's walking down a road, he gets knocked off, and apparently, according to him, Isa, or Jesus, begins to speak to him. There's a conversion that takes place, and all of a sudden, he's the starter of the religion of Christianity. Now, what's interesting about this situation is that he is not the first to follow Esau. Before him, there are years and years and years, a huge following of persons who followed the teachings of Esau. And there is already another leader of the Christian church. We talked about that, James, or Yaqub. He's already the head of the church. But Paul has this experience. He has a spiritual experience. He comes into direct contact. And out of that direct contact that he says that he has with Jesus, all of the theology of Christianity emerges. All of the epistles, everything that's written, Romans, 1 Corinthians, 2 Corinthians, Ephesians, all of the books, come out of this experience. And inside of those books is the foundation for Christian theology today. So the truth is that nothing that's written there was given to Paul directly by Jesus. The Christians have believed that this has happened because of divine inspiration. God has divinely inspired Paul. And my argument with my brother is this: if that is so, then your entire faith isn't based on Isa. Your entire faith is based on whether or not Paul is telling the truth or not. Your entire faith is based on whether he really had an experience, whether he was a true follower of Isa. Because if he's not, if he comes out to be a liar, if he comes out to be somebody who has actually been on the opposite end of this conflict, he's actually a Hellenized Jew who hates people, anybody who is talking about the Messianic movement or a Messiah, if he's on that end, then he's not part of the religion, the movement of Esau at all. He's something entirely different. Well, let's say a few things about this guy Paul, because he's so important, because he's at the foundation of Christianity. Number one, he's from Tarsus. And we talked about before that there are two major factions in Judaism at this time. There are the Hellenized Jews who lived in the Roman world, and then there are the Jews who were on the straight path, the Jews who are trying to hold on to their religion. And they live in Jerusalem. So there's two groups. From starter, day one, sentence one, Paul is a Hellenized Jew. He is from Tarsus. And not only that, but that he makes it even clear in his own writings that he's a Pharisee. Now, something interesting about the Pharisees is that the Pharisees, the word itself seems to come from a word called separate from, or the splitters away. And they emerge during the time of the Maccabeans. We talked about this move, that Judah Maccabee rebels against the Greeks, that we're not going to stand idly by and let you overtake our land and stop us from practicing our religion, and they end up in revolt. Well, there are those who disagreed with Judah Maccabee. There are those who disagreed with those who decided to defend themselves, and they were called Pharisees, those who were separated from that movement. Interesting, Paul says that he is a Pharisee. He's part of this movement. Now, if we know that there are two movements at this time, there are the Jews who are trying to uphold their religion, and there are those who have separated from that. They are the Pharisees. That group is attached to the Romans. And we're going to see, pretty quickly here that Paul is attached to the Romans. If he's attached to the Romans and he's a Hellenized Jew, it means that he is actively opposed to any type of reorganization of the religion back to its origin. He's opposed to it. Paul, being part of the Pharisees, you have to understand that they were pro-occupation. They wanted everything to be fine, everything to be okay. The high priest who's in power at this time, who's Caiaphas. Caiaphas is a paid servant of the Romans. He is there to make sure that nothing gets out of hand, that he squashes any movement. That's his job. And they're Pharisees. And they're anti-Maccabean, which means... Yes?
Can I ask a little question here?
Yes.
My understanding of the Christian version of this is that you had Jews who wanted to cling to Judaism, and you had Christians... obviously, it's not right. I'm just laying out this how I understood from their painting of this situation. And you had the so-called Christians, who accepted the new Messiah, and the Jews rejected the Messiah. So now, what you're laying out is, I think it's important to contrast these two and see how they're different, is that the Jews who wanted to preserve Judaism, those were the followers of Esau.
Exactly. We're gonna talk about that later on, that in about 20 minutes or so, we'll start talking about that. And that's exactly correct. That what you have, like you have this big movie out right now, The Passions of the Christ. It's a great story. It's a very sad story. Has absolutely nothing to do with Esau. Has absolutely nothing to do with that time period. It's a fabricated story. And by next week, we'll start talking about what they call the passion narrative. We'll start talking about how that story about this torturing of the Messiah is a fabrication. That never happened, especially not in the context that it takes place there. But that's going to take some time. We'll talk about that next week. We won't be able to get into it this week. Now, we have to understand something else about Paul. That Paul is persecuting the followers of Esau. He says it himself in his own writings, that he was working for the high priest. And remember, the high priest is appointed by the Romans. They are anti-Maccabean. They are anti-Messianic movement. Paul is working for them. And what's interesting about Paul is that Paul is a member of the house of Herod. As a matter of fact, that Paul, in his own writings, in Romans chapter 16, and I didn't know this until just recently, within the last couple of days, and I want to read this because somebody had mentioned this to me before, and I didn't get it, that Paul, after, remember the epistles, and remember some of the epistles are written after the fall of Jerusalem, and the followers of Esau have been defeated in one battle. But Paul, while he's in Romans, he says something really interesting. In the 16th chapter, he, in the 11th verse, he gives greetings to Herodian, my relative, he says, and greetings to those who belong to the house of Aristobulus. Now, that seems like such a benign thing to say. He gives salam to this guy, Aristobulus. He gives salam to somebody named Herodian. Well, I started looking into this to find out who these people are. What's interesting is that Aristobulus was the son of Herod, of Chalcias, and Bernice. Aristobulus was the son of Herod, who persecuted Yahya. They were the persons who killed him. They were the persons who killed him in their own writing. The story goes that Herod is watching his niece dance. And he is so enthralled with her that he tells her, whatever you want, I'll give you. Well, her name is Salome. And Salome, told by her mother, tell him you want the head of John the Baptist on a platter. And Herod gives in and says, okay, according to their own writings, chops his head off, puts it on a platter for this woman. And what's interesting is that Paul gives salam to the house of Herod, and to a guy named Aristobulus. Aristobulus is married to Salome, the woman who danced in front of Herod and asked for the head of Yahya. And this is who he's giving salam to. Isn't that interesting? I thought that was profound, right? So
must be a community of righteousness.
Exactly. And what I've tried to point out to people when we talk about this is that, again, we're talking about two groups. A group that hated the Nazarite movement. Yahya, Isa, and James, and all the people who are in this area are all part of this Nazarite movement who are in opposition to Roman occupation. And Paul makes it clear by saying he's from Tarsus. He says he's a Hellenized Jew. By saying that he worked for the high priest, it's very clear that he works for the Romans, and he works for the high priest, who's also paid by the Romans. And then third, the fact that he says, and greetings, Herodian, my relative, he is also related to the very people who executed Yahya. Well, is he a follower of Isa? I don't think so. But we'll look a little closer here. This is who Paul is giving greetings to and related to, the family who executed Yahya. Now, remember, we're talking about who should we believe as to being the follower of Isa, and who's on the correct path. Who is really trying to uphold the idea of the Messiah? Is it Yahya? I mean, is it Paul, or is it James? Now, let's look at James. Now, James is the leader of the Jesus movement by election. He's already in power by the time Paul has his, quote, conversion. And what's interesting is that the history that is used to try to verify this for Paul and for James is called the Book of Acts. It's supposed to be the Acts of the Apostles. But when we start looking at it as a book of history, it's all mixed up. It's in pieces. It's not in chronological order. And if we, in a more advanced class, we would take that apart, but we can't do that here. We don't have enough time to take that apart. I'd probably lose most people. It's really not fun to go through. But he is a true follower of Esau. He is with Esau during the time that he's here. He is with Esau when there's already a disgruntling population of pro-Roman Hellenized Jews who don't like what they're saying, that we should begin to prepare ourselves both spiritually and physically for an inevitable warfare that must take place in order to remove this injustice against the Jewish people. They don't like that. James is anti-Herod, which means he's anti-Paul's family. And that would make, you know, Paul kind of upset. He doesn't like his uncle or something, you know. He's also anti-Roman as a whole. He doesn't like this. Again, he's a Nazarite. He's anti-Roman. He's anti the priesthood impostors. Because remember, we already said the high priest who is the head of the Jews, that person at the time of Esau and James is appointed directly by the Romans. That's Caiaphas. Caiaphas is directly appointed. James is against him. As a matter of fact, the conclusion of James's life is going to be in a direct conflict with the high priest that's in power. And we'll talk about that in a little bit. Now, he is beloved by the Jews. James, in every historical writing of the Jews of this period of time, nobody has anything to say but the most highest praise. They call him Zadoki. They call him the Just. They give him the highest name that you can give to a human being, right underneath calling him, you know, a messenger or a prophet. He's like right there. He is the most righteous person.
Oh, by the way, I think you mentioned before that word you just flew right over right now.
Yes.
Zadoki.
Yeah.
It appears to be a translation of the word as-Siddiq.
Yes, it's the same.
Also the nickname given to Abu Bakr, the foremost and number one follower of Muhammad ibn Abdullah. So Yaqub, this Yaqub was Yaqub as-Siddiq.
Yes.
Number one believer and follower of Islam.
That's right. And that's interesting because when we talk later, when we get closer to the time of Islam, and we start seeing that all the words that are being used at the time of Isa to talk about his followers and to talk about Isa, we're going to have them identical. The only difference is you're moving from one Semitic language to another. You're going from Hebrew and Aramaic, and then you go into Arabic. But the words that are being used this time are identical. So when we begin to say that Isa is closer to the religion of Islam, or he's a Muslim, we're not saying this just linguistically. We're saying this as a reality, that what they believe, and we're going to talk about this in a minute, I love this part, when we talk about James and what happens with Paul in just a moment, we find Islam. Now, there's something else that needs to be said about James, is that he's a lover of his religion. He is on the religion of Abraham. That's what they're fighting for. They're not fighting because they want to believe in a Messiah who's fully God and fully human. That doesn't come around for hundreds of years after this. It does not take place during the time of James and Esau. And though we find semblances of that thinking in the Gospels, again, the Gospels don't come around till much later after this movement. It doesn't happen. Now, there's something that happens in Jerusalem. Paul is having some type of conversion. He has a conversion, but he's going around and he's telling people that you do not need to follow the law. You don't need to do that. Because the root of this whole conflict between the Hellenized Jews and the Jews who are on the right path is the Jews on the right path want to maintain their holding on to the law. In the same way that the Muslim says, there's a reason why I make salat this way. There's a reason why I pray this way. There's a reason why I fast this way. There's a reason why I purify myself in this way. There's a reason why I do these things, and it's based within the laws that have been given to us in our religion, and we're not going to leave them. But because to leave the laws of the religion is to leave the religion as a whole. And so between James and Paul, the difference is James wants to maintain holding on to that. The movement of Isa wants to hold on to the laws that govern the basis of their religion, while the Hellenized Jews want them to give it up. Because what happens with the Jews who are on the right path is that the minute that there is opposition against their ability to practice their religion, they are ready for warfare. They are ready to take up arms in order to defend it. But Paul, from very early on, and he says it himself in the book of Acts, therefore, there is no condemnation for those who are in Christ Jesus, who walk not after the flesh but after the Spirit. If I'm following, you know, the right way in my heart, right, that there's no condemnation against me because I believe in Christ, and that supersedes and is greater than any type of works that shows my faithfulness. And something happens in Jerusalem. Paul is walking around telling people that you don't have to follow the law. You don't have to be circumcised. You can eat whatever you want. You can just eat it. It's okay if it's sacrificed to an idol. It's okay that there's blood, and there's no problem with it. You can do what you want because it's no longer about being circumcised in the flesh, which is talking about following the law, but it's about being circumcised in the heart. The fact that my heart is in the right condition, and I believe in Christ, that's enough. Well, what's interesting about this is that he is called in front of the apostles. There are, and even in Paul's own writings in the book of Acts, Paul says that he's confronted by, quote, Judaizers. What he's talking about is the Jewish followers of Isa. The followers of Isa. He's confronted by them. They said, you can't teach that. Isa didn't come to destroy the law. He came up to uphold it. He came here to make sure that we stayed on the right path. And Paul is summoned in front of the council at Jerusalem. And he writes it himself. It's in the 15th chapter of the book of Acts. And what's interesting about this chapter is that in it, you don't find Paul as the head of the apostles. You have Paul going up to see the apostles. And who's at the top of this council? James. And Paul is there. He gives his argument, him and Barnabas, about how great things have been done through them. And I'm not going to read the whole thing. But he goes on to talk about why there shouldn't be any circumcision and why there shouldn't be any more laws that govern eating habits and other types of regulations. James historically responds to him and says, you're wrong. As a matter of fact, you have James in the book of Acts saying, it is my judgment, therefore, that we should not make it difficult for the Gentiles who are turning to God. Instead, we should write to them telling them to abstain from food polluted to idols, which means that they weren't slaughtered correctly, or they were dedicated to other gods, from sexual immorality, which means to tell them to stay away from fornication, to stay away from incest, to stay away from all the laws that govern our sexuality, and from meat strangled by animals, and from blood. For Moses has been preached in every city from the earliest time, and is read in the synagogues on every Sabbath. His point is, we're not making it difficult for the Gentiles, or for those who are not Jewish, who now want to come into the faith of Isa, or into this new movement. We're making it simple for them. They don't have to go through every single custom and law that exists inside of the Torah. It would be overwhelming to them. Instead, let them start here. Let them start at La ilaha illallah. Next, let them start at the Salat. Let them begin to pray. And then let them fast. And then there is a movement. And what James is ruling is, you shouldn't overburden the new believer. You shouldn't do it. Now, here's what's interesting about James in this time. Is James, even by Paul's own word and his followers, the Luke who wrote the book of Acts, says that James doesn't let Paul go back by himself. And as a matter of fact, James sends a letter to the Gentile believers and sends his followers, who are the followers of Isa, with Paul back to his churches to say these things to him. Now, I would say this, that if I'm wrong about Islam and I get correction from somebody who knows better, thank you. Because now I can practice my religion correctly. Does Paul do that? Is he part of the followers so that when he's corrected by somebody who's the leader of this movement, who knows because he spent time with Isa personally and directly, will he say, you're right, brother, you know what, I was wrong, I shouldn't have said those things? That isn't what happens. One of his churches, of Paul's churches or his congregations, is in a place called Galatia. And again, Paul is not in Jerusalem. He is not around the followers of Isa until later. He is doing his own thing on the other side of the world. I mean, it's not like today where, you know, I can jump in a car and make it to Bakersfield or make it back to Fresno in a couple hours. I mean, if you're talking about 500 or 600 or 700 miles, you're a long distance away. And you can do a lot of stuff a long ways away. You don't have the internet. You don't have telephones. You can do a lot of stuff and not get caught for it. And Paul does that. Because here's a thesis question I want to ask is this. And ask any Christian this. What is Paul's response to the fact that James has corrected him? I'll tell you, it's found in the book called Galatians. And Galatians is written to the church of Galatia. It's a Roman province. It's a place that has nothing but Hellenized Jews and polytheists and pagan Romans. That's all there. This is how he responds. And it's interesting that when you go into, if you've ever been to a church or you hear a Christian talk, they never talk about this. Why did Paul write this book? It's obvious that he doesn't just talk about praying or we should be good people, believe in Isa this way. No. Galatians was a direct response to James to tell his own people what he believed. And this is what he said. And this is good. And I want to emphasize this word. Seems. This is Paul, what he responds to the Judaizers, all the followers of Isa. He says, 14 years later, I went up again to Jerusalem, this time with Barnabas. I took Paul, Titus along also. What he's talking about the time he went to Jerusalem to see James. He said, I went in response to a revelation and set before them the gospel that I preached among the Gentiles. He wasn't saying that before. Before, when he was standing in front of James and James was telling him, schooling him on what really is and what is not, he wasn't doing this. He wasn't saying, this is the way you need to believe and Jesus Christ came to me and gave me this revelation. You should believe it. He's writing this stuff because James and his followers aren't around. Now listen to what he says. He says, but I did this privately to those who seemed to be leaders for fear that I was running or had run my race in vain. Yet not even Titus, who was with me, was compelled to be circumcised. And what he says is, as I went to those who thought of themselves as the leaders of this movement, who thought of themselves as pillars of the church, and you know what? No matter what they said, my followers were not compelled, even though James said they must be circumcised, wasn't compelled to do, and we walked away and were defiant to him because he was wrong. That is the next person in charge of the movement of Isa, who everyone in this period of time said he was the most just person. You have Paul saying otherwise, saying, nope, we didn't listen to him, and we don't care what he has to say. He says, this matter arose because some false brothers, he's talking about the followers of Isa, had infiltrated our ranks. No, they came to find out what he was doing. Infiltrated our ranks to spy on the freedom we have in Jesus Christ and make us slaves. No, they weren't. They were trying to correct these people who were perverting the teachings of Isa and perverting the teachings of Musa. And they were saying, you can't do that. You're teaching a lie. And there's going to be major consequences for Paul doing this. And we'll talk about it in a minute. As for those who seem to be important, whatever they make, no difference to me. God does not judge by external appearances. Those men added nothing to my message. What he said was, it doesn't matter whether they have a beard, whether they're circumcised. It doesn't matter whether they make salat in the same way that Isa does. It doesn't matter the fact that they keep these laws outside. The fact that I keep it inside the heart, they're spying on my freedom. Because inside I'm circumcised. Inside my heart, you know, I make salat. Inside my heart I have a beard. Inside I'm pious. And therefore I can eat whatever I want. I can marry whoever I want. I can do whatever I want. That's not freedom. He's taking these people that are following him into the hellfire with him. On the contrary, they saw that I had been entrusted with the task of preaching the gospel to the Gentiles, just as Peter had been to the Jews. For God, who was at work in the ministry of Peter as an apostle to the Jews, was also working in my ministry as an apostle to the Gentiles. James, Peter, and John, those reputed to be pillars, gave me and Barnabas the right hand of fellowship. No, they didn't. What they did was is send their followers holding their right hand and taking them back to their churches to tell them you need to stop teaching this nonsense. But this is Paul's response. Paul's response to James, who is the head of the church, put into power by the Bea of the followers of Isa, who said, you're best among us. And even the Jews who didn't believe them still saw them best among all of them, James being the best. Now, here's what's interesting. I mean, what the Christians would like to do is have James just fade into history and you just forget about him. Or you somehow manipulate what he's saying about how to worship Allah and manipulate that to make it sound like it sounds like Paul. Well, even the best scholars, and I pointed this out, of Christianity, Martin Luther being one of them, said we have to get rid of the book of James because James contradicts what Paul says. Paul says we have freedom in all things. We can eat whatever we want. We can do whatever we want. What does James say? James, in response to Paul, this is what he writes about faith and deeds. And he's writing to a very specific person. Now, remember what we just said about Jerusalem. Remember what Paul's response is to James. Now listen to James's writing. What? No, we're in the book of James now. And we're in the second chapter. Says, what good is it, my brothers, if a man claims to have faith but has no deeds? Can such faith save him? Suppose a brother or sister is without clothes and daily food. If one of you says to him, go, I wish you well, keep warm and well fed, but does not do anything about his physical needs, what good is it? In the same way, faith by itself, if it is not accomplished by action, is dead. But if someone will say, you have faith and I have deeds. He's talking about somebody. He's talking about Paul. Show me your faith without deeds and I will show you my faith by what I do. You believe that there is no God? Good. Even the jinn believe that and shudder. You foolish man. Do you want evidence that faith without deeds is useless? What was not our ancestor Abraham considered righteous for what he did when he offered his son on the altar? You see that his faith and his actions were working together, and his faith was made complete by what he did. And the scripture was fulfilled that says Abraham believed God and it was accredited to him as righteousness. You see that a person is justified by what he does and not by faith alone. That's James's response to the lies that Paul is spreading among his churches. The problem is that James is isolated in Jerusalem. He can't walk around freely. He can't go into Rome if he wants to. Why? He's not a citizen. The only people who are Roman citizens this time, who are allowed the freedom to do what Paul is doing, are Roman citizens. Caiaphas could do that. He's got a Roman citizenship. I mean, it's like having a free pass by the CIA to infiltrate anybody you want and go anywhere you want. That's what they're doing. Paul is running around with his freedom to spread these lies because he has a free pass by basically the secret service of the Romans and the Jews at this time, or the Hellenized Jews. So what is James's response? The least he can do is write a letter. But, I feel for Paul if he enters Jerusalem again. How will the Christians respond to him, or the followers of Esau? How will they respond? Will they come and say, Paul, thank you for unveiling the lies of James and all of these people who followed Esau when Esau was here? Thank you for dispelling those lies, because now we're on the right path with you. That's not what happens. As a matter of fact, Paul, when he arrives back in Jerusalem, probably to get help from those he works for, the high priest and from the Romans, and because his people live there. He's related to Herod. He's related to the family of Herod. He's their relative. He lives among them. Those are his people. He's a Roman citizen. So apparently he must have went back on some type of visit. So I'm being slightly facetious about this because I hate this man. Because this man is going to be the cause of so much deception up until the current time. In Acts, what's interesting about Acts is it's written by a follower of Paul. And so you have to take this in into account. If you have somebody who is pro-Paul, and he is saying some really bad things about Paul, you automatically have to assume, at least for myself, it's logical that it was probably a lot worse than this. Whatever he says that's already bad must be a little worse than this, at least. And this is what happens in the book of Acts. In the book of Acts, in the 21st chapter, Paul goes back into Jerusalem, and he is confronted by James. James confronts him. And it's written that in the 17th verse, it says, when we arrived at Jerusalem, the brothers received us warmly. That's Paul saying this. The next day, Paul and the rest of us went to see James and all the elders. Wait a minute, I thought he didn't receive anything from them. I thought they were just people who seemed to be pillars of the church. He didn't take anything from them. Now he's going to see them because they're the elders and they're the head of this movement. Why are they going for? Isn't he in open opposition against the lies of James? And now he's being submissive to this. He says, Paul greeted them and reported in detail what God had done among the Gentiles through his ministry. Yeah, I'm sure that he didn't tell them everything. When they heard this, they praised God. Then they said to Paul, you see, brother, how many thousands of Jews have believed? All of them are zealous for the law. They have been informed that you teach all the Jews who live among the Gentiles to turn away from Moses, telling them not to be circumcised, and their children who live according to their customs. What shall we do? They will certainly hear that you have come, and so do what you do what we tell you. There are four men with us who have made a vow. Take these men, join in their purification rites, and pay their expenses so they can have their head shaved. What does James say? Buddy, you better repent. And you better have some outward sign of repentance for what you've been saying. Because if you're coming here and shaking our hands and saying, hey, we did great works, spreading the teachings of Esau throughout the world, the truth is already known. The followers of Esau know what you've been doing. They're going to kill you for saying what you've been saying about Esau and about Musa, about throwing away the law. They're going to kill you. Repent. So what does Paul do? Does Paul, buck up and put out his chest and say, no, I don't think so. I'm going to stand my ground because Jesus in the form of Allah came down and he spoke to me and it's the truth and I'm ready for, to be shaheed? Uh-uh. Paul shaves his head. It says this. It says that, as for the Gentile believers who have written to them, our decision that they should abstain from food sacrificed to idols, from blood and from meat of strangled animals, and from sexual immorality. He said, this is what you did. We told you. This is what you should be teaching your people. You did otherwise. The next day, Paul took the men and purified himself along with them. He repents for what he says. He repents for what he does. And what happens? Paul goes out in front of the people to show his repentance, and the followers of Esau will have none of it. They're going to kill him for what he's been doing. Now, by Paul's own he attests himself. He says, when the 7 days were nearly over, the time of purification for the Jews, some Jews from the province of Asia saw the province of Asia, where he's from, this area where he's been spreading his lies, saw him. And it says, saw Paul at the temple. They stirred up the whole crowd and seized him, shouting, men of Israel, help us. This is the man who teaches men everywhere against our people and against our laws in this place. And besides, he has brought Greeks into the temple area and defied this holy place. What he did is he brought his followers who weren't converts, who were uncircumcised, who eat whatever they want. They are people who are the most wretched, who have rejected the movement of Isa and have rejected Judaism, the religion of Musa, and they're inside the temple. It's like having a bunch of polytheists in the middle of the Kaaba. You know, in the middle of Hajj, you have them walking around boasting about the fact that they're uncircumcised, they're not believers, they're going to go and eat their food with blood, they're going to go and do whatever they want. What would the Muslim response be if they knew that was taking place inside of the Kaaba? And this is the response of the Jews. How dare you bring them here? How dare bring your lies into the midst of the purity of this religion? The place where Isa brought us truth. How can you do that? This is the home of Israel. This is the home of our religion. So Paul is surrounded. They drag him out. They're going to kill him. Paul pulls out his trump card. What he does is, he says, I'm a Roman citizen. I'm a Roman citizen, and according to his own attestation in Acts 21, the Roman soldiers come and they grab him out of the crowd and they protect him because he's a citizen. And the only people who get citizenship are those who are already in the paid service of Rome and in the paid service of the high priest. So it's obviously that Paul is not on the path of Esau, and he's not on the path of James, who is on the path of Esau. He is directly opposed to them. And though James writes and tells him to stop, orders him to stop, and sends people to instruct them, takes Paul by the right hand by the followers of Esau, they take him back and say, this is how the religion is supposed to be practiced. This is how you make salah. This is the laws of this religion. This is how we believe in Esau. He rejects it and continues to spread his lies, and when he's confronted on it, and listen, I might have a little bit of respect for this guy if he stood his ground, right? But he cowers at these ideas. And there's a reason for that. He's not a believer. For me, I believe he's working, he admits it himself, he's working for the Romans. He's there to start division among the followers of Esau and among the followers of James because they realize how powerful this movement is. Now, what happens is that Paul, he gets a letter from the high priest. Remember I was talking about Acts isn't in chronological order. Paul, upset by this, gets a letter from the high priest. And the reason why I know that he gets a letter of a high priest directly after this is that some of the books that are no longer inside of the Christian canonical scriptures talk about somebody. They talk about this guy named Saul, in other books that are not in there. They're historical writings. And even Josephus talks about this, that there is this guy named Saulus who stirs up trouble among the Jews inside of Jerusalem, and it leads to the death of James directly. And the followers at Qumran, the followers of James, are going to call this person their enemy, the dark one. They're going to call this person that he's come to start division among the followers of Esau. Now, one of these books that I'm going to read from is what they call the Pseudo-Clementian writings. And it talks about, let me quote from this, a certain man who was an enemy, I'm saying it's Paul, and I'll explain to you why, with a few others came into the temple near the altar. Remember, the temple is controlled by the high priest who's employed by the Romans. He cried out saying, what are you doing, O children of Israel? Are you so easily carried away by this miserable man who strays after magicians? This is, of course, a reference to Esau. You have this evil person who's coming saying, you're following this person named Esau, this person who strays after magicians. He's spreading lies about him. But why would he say that? I mean, why would he go and say something like that and blast the very person that in the temple that he claims to be falling? Well, in the same writing, there's something that says this. The enemy then, in front of the priest, promised the high priest Caiaphas that he would kill all those believing in Isa. He set out for Damascus to go as one carrying letters from them, so that wherever he went, those who did not believe would help him destroy those who did. He wanted to go there first because he thought that Peter had gone there. Now here's what's interesting, is that Paul, by his own account in Acts, says that he got letters from the high priest. He got letters from the high priest to persecute the Christians. Now here's what's interesting, is in a writing of the followers of James are saying this person is called the enemy. His name is Saul, right? Who later changed his name to Paul. I would too if I was out there, you know, killing Christians and I claimed to be one. I'd change my name too. But according to the writings that are not in the Christian writings, the followers of Esau were persecuted by this guy named Paul. Well, at what point did he start persecuting them? He started persecuting them after the Christians, the followers of Esau, rejected him. He went back to his friends, Caiaphas and the Romans, said, I want to persecute these people, got a letter of recommendation, and went out to begin to do this. And there's a confrontation that takes place in the temple of Jerusalem. James is there, and he's arguing with the pseudo-priest, Ananias, who is the pseudo-priest put in power by the Romans. They're debating inside of the temple about the fact that they have defiled their religion. And this is what happens. It says this, that about a debate. It says, argumentation then followed, and just at that point, when he was about to be overcome in debate by James the bishop, he began to create a great commotion. He's talking about this person called the enemy. That this person called the enemy is arguing with James inside of the temple. Now, I'm going to go out on a limb and I'm going to say it's Paul. Paul's arguing with James because now he's not by himself. Now he's got the high priest, he's got the Hellenized Jews behind him, he's got Roman soldiers behind him. Now he's ready to confront James and debate him. James basically spanks this kid and he's about to overcome him. He says, so that matters were being correctly and calmly explained, could not be either properly... At that point, he raised an outcry over the weakness and foolishness of the priests, reproaching them and crying out, why do you delay? Why do you not immediately seize all those who are with him? James and his followers. Seize James and his followers, because they're basically proving that we're in the wrong. It says, then he rose and was first to seize a firebrand from the altar, which is a big, heavy... poker for the fire. Says that the accounts of the young man among the priests seized clubs and beating everyone, even a high priest serving at the altar in a state of uncleanliness. Okay. Says the rest of the priests, when they saw him, then followed his example. In the panic-stricken flight that ensued, some fell over others, and others were beaten. And what happens is a huge fight breaks out with the followers of Isa, at the head of which is James, and the Hellenized Jews, and the Hellenized high priest, who is in opposition to James, and James in opposition to him. James opens up the book of the law, begins to talk about the teachings of Isa, begins to talk about the teachings of Moses, and they're angry with them, so they take up clubs, they take up these firebrands to begin to fight against James and his followers. Now here's what happens. James is grabbed by this person called the enemy. Paul, Silenus, grabs him and throws him down the steps of the temple, and takes that firebrand and beats his head until he opens his skull and kills him. Well, what's interesting is that immediately after this, Saul changes his name to Paul. Changes his name. Because this guy, Silenus, Saul, is talked about in both Josephus and other outside sources as the person who actually kills James, the leader of the Jesus movement after Isa. And this causes such an outcry, not only among the followers of Isa, but the Jews who weren't even followers of Isa, because they killed the most righteous man that they could think of at this point. He was the most respected man, and he was killed unjustly because he was arguing in the temple about the fact that they were wrong. He was reasoning with them. to come around. And what takes place after this is a war, a war that overthrows Rome. And I'm not going to tell you guys much more about that until next week. What we're going to say is here, is that in this fight, Saul attacks James and basically beats his brains out after throwing him down the stairs. The followers of James, the followers of Issa, then leave into the mountains. They flee into Qumran. They flee into Masada. They flee to take up weapons and to prepare themselves. This is the final draw, and they overthrow Roman occupation. And every historical record that we know at this time, both Christian writers this time, Clement and Jerome, as well as Roman writers this time and Jewish writers, all say that the murder of James by this man Saul, they identified as the enemy, is what causes the fight to break out. There is no more waiting to purify yourself and getting ready, you know, letting your iman grow. No, it doesn't happen. They take up weapons and they fight the Romans. And what's interesting is that Saul flees at this time into one of the castles, or one into the strongholds of Herod. And I'm going to give it just in brief, and then we'll talk about it next week. And when it's overrun by the followers of Issa, the Nazarites, it's overrun. Saul somehow escapes from there, and he goes into the camp of Vespasian, who's going to come back, and he's actually going to conquer these people, and he's going to negotiate for them. He's going to negotiate for the surrender of Jerusalem, and basically not only betray the followers of Issa, he's going to betray all of the Jews who were in there trying to gain independence, him and the Hellenized Jews. It's one of the most tragic stories that I know of in history, is one man, almost by himself, overthrowing some of the most righteous people who have ever lived. Inshallah, we'll start from there next week. May Allah guide us to truth. Is there any questions? Anybody have any questions, either audibly or typed?
This is the truth here. This is the bottom line. This is that area science talks about when you look three layers deep, yeah, and you find the total truth. This is it.
Yeah. Well, next week what we're gonna start talking about is the Gospels themselves, why they're put together, and why they paint Issa the way they paint him, and why they paint the followers of Issa like cowards.
This is the most important. This is the most important session that I believe you're going to be able to ever say. Because this fight between James and Paul, and I know, I tell my mother, I said all my life, every church I've ever been into, I heard Paul's name more than I ever heard Jesus' name, and that's the truth. Any church you go to, man.
Okay, assalamu alaikum. That's it for today. If you know any of these people who were trying to get in and couldn't, please help them out or refer them to me, and also refer them to this recording, which should be posted in a couple of hours, inshallah, for anyone to listen to. So, inshallah, we'll see you next week, if not before. Check our schedule. Most of those things are happening. One last chance in case anyone has a question to ask Brother Abdullah. Okay, we'll close it at that. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.